ComicBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookB on this Tuesday, February 12th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We'll go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me as we kick off a new week on Bang the Book Radio. Skipped yesterday's show. I was driving back from visiting my wife's friends and family down in South Carolina, so unable to do the show. So we'll go with four shows this week. Should be back on track for a full week next week. As far as this Tuesday edition of the show goes, the same two guests you can expect every Tuesday here. Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline, will join us. We'll chat some NHL and some Genesis Open, the former Los Angeles Open, out at Riviera Country Club, star-studded field on tap here for this week's golf event. Second half of today's show, Rolf Michaels, professional handicapper from WagerTalk.com, will join us. We'll chat college basketball with him. We'll look at some conference stuff in the ACC. We'll also look at the Missouri Valley Conference and then get his top situational and technical plays of the week. Over at BangTheBook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Obviously, a slower start for me this week. I'll get my golf preview up today as well as my daily fantasy picks. Daytona 500 is this weekend, so I'll have a preview for that. Still working hard on my Major League Baseball stuff as well, but Kyle Hunter's daily college basketball picks, Parker Michaels' daily NHL picks. We've got daily NBA stuff from Alan Moody. We got a lot of great things going on over at BangTheBook.com right now, your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. As you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook, BTB200 is that promo code, 100% deposit match bonus for the Sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Two guests on the program here today. We start things off with Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Hey, Adam, how you doing? But I'm glad. Thanks for the reminder. I'm looking forward to the return of NASCAR and the Daytona 500 this weekend. That ball's behind us, and some other things to watch. And don't kid yourself with the NASCAR. They do matchups, group parlays, and odds to win for all these NASCAR races. Kind of throwing darts with Daytona. The nature of the race itself, as we saw with the Clash, where Jimmy Johnson took the whole field out and won the race.
Well, I guess that gives us another thing to talk about here today, because you and I were kind of talking before we started recording here. I've been out of the loop for 4 days or so, kind of, taking a cursory glance at Twitter as much as I possibly could, and obviously looking at, my score apps to try and see what's going on. But, you mentioned yesterday you played some golf, took the day off, so you're kind of scrambling a little bit for information here, too. And, it's one of the things that I think is a pretty important point to drive home for a lot of our listeners out there is that, when you miss a day, maybe you try to catch up, you try to pay attention to all the information that's out there, but maybe keep it light with the bankroll.
Oh, that, and I would even look, you and I were talking about, we'll get into the hockey as well. Tuesdays are always great. You get a monster slate of games, and I'm looking at it, and sometimes things just kind of jump off the page, or I'm looking at this, look at that, and some of these you got to dive deep and you're really digging it. Sometimes if you got to search really hard, even though there's a myriad of games, I may be finding a few things now, the more I'm looking, doesn't mean that sometimes the best bet is the one you don't make.
Yeah. And especially too, this is one of the things that makes it really hard for people that have regular 9-to-5 jobs to be consistent winning handicappers. Is just the amount of time that you have to dedicate to this business is just so significant. So, if you are out of the loop, if you go out of town, if you're dealing with sick kids or whatever else, hey, maybe take it a little bit easy for a couple of days as you sort of get back in the pool and you're able to take those water wings off again. But Brian, I guess since we're kind of going off the cuff a little bit here today, anyway, you mentioned NASCAR. Let's go ahead and start with that. The Daytona 500 this weekend, as you mentioned, it is a plate race, so a lot of crazy things can happen, crashes, late pit stops, all kinds of weird things. It's a very high variance handicap for the Daytona 500. But in general, what does your handicapping process look like for NASCAR?
On a week-to-week basis, NASCAR very much is a horse-for-course kind of thing. Certain guys, like a Denny Hamlin or Kurt Busch or guys you'd always look at Pocono, the road courses, there are certain guys. You know, Kyle Busch is a factor. Truex now has got a different team. Jimmy Johnson's got a different crew chief, and he won the Clash. The crew chief matters. So new teams, you see some teams are just horrible in the pits. Some are going to be a driver that maybe had a goes to a new team. All of a sudden he's got a good pit crew, and all of a sudden this guy emerges onto the scene. So I would think out of the gate, you know, there's a learning curve, and you see what's going on. I would say this, watching the 75-lap clash, which didn't make 75 laps, it was weird. The outside lane was the only lane that was moving, so literally it was like a big 30-car train. And so I think a lot of drivers learned a lot of stuff in that race. And then you go to guys that are good with kind of the plate racing, where you basically your foot's to the floor the whole time. And then there's strategies. Like Kevin Harvick, he just goes to the back of the back. He doesn't want to be involved in any of the accidents, and the serious racing doesn't begin until the final 30, 40 laps. It's you know, it's kind of one of those things, survive to have a chance to race at the end.
Yeah, and like you said, and you know, my dad is a big NASCAR fan, so I've been happy to write the previews for Bang the Book. It gives me something to talk about with him, because I'm not really a big NASCAR guy, but as I've dug more into the research for it, for writing the previews, now the horse for course thing you mentioned is very, very accurate. And, you know, some car manufacturers just handle better on different tracks as well. Some of them are better on the mile and a half tracks. Others are better with the, you know, tighter turns and the smaller tracks. And, you know, it is one of those things where there is a lot of repetition in the handicap, as you mentioned, with that horse for course angle. And, you know, looking at recent finishes that guys have had, you know, it's just, it's a pretty complex market that, you know, I don't think a whole lot of people really dive that deep into. Brian, are you still there?
Yeah. You went away.
All right. Well, you know what? It seems kind of fitting for the fact that you and I are both kind of flying from the seat of our pants here a little bit on today's show. But
yeah, I lost the last – you went silent there the last 15 seconds. But are we good? We're good to go?
Yeah, we're good. I mean, I thought I'd make today into a silent movie kind of show, you know, just sort of
hey.
Black and white and everything.
Some people, you may not complain.
That's a good point. Good point. Well, if you're going to complain about listening to Bang the Book Radio, then obviously you don't want to do it. But, you know, I guess the last thing I'll ask you about here with NASCAR is, you know, do you what is your sort of bankroll approach for it? I mean, you know, are you looking to play the mid-range type of thing like you do for golf? How do you sort of structure, you know, your picks to win the race?
No. In that last year, and I'm going from memory, you'll help me. Who was the third guy? It was the big three. It was Harvick. I got it. It was Harvick, Truex, and Kyle Busch won whatever it was, like 75-80% of the races. It was one of those three guys. You know, the place where you take a long shot would be Talladega, you know, places like and maybe the, you know, the road courses, some different guys step up to the plate. But you know, on the mile and a half tracks, it's going to be the guy's got the best car. I mean, you can't handle the car. You got no answer for it. So out here, I know over at the Superbook they do it's called group parlays, where there's a four guys in a group to win the group, and they're all plus prices. So there's a way to do that. You can parlay those that actually produces a nice return. And then there are matchups. You know, basically, you kind of got to go all in. It's much different than golf. Where when we talk about golf, I'll start a golf tournament with three or four guys. In NASCAR, I wouldn't go any further than two drivers in a race. So there's just a different strategy. With what works for me, you know, I mean, other people could have a different approach to it, but that's worked for me over the course of the last several years. And I would say I've actually used to kind of watch it. Well, I'm watching it, just start doing your homework on it. Let's see if we can do some, you know, do a little damage with it. And actually the last couple of years been able to do pretty well in NASCAR.
So do you typically, you know, do you try to hit the market early on in the week when the lines just open and try to get some line value, or are you waiting until after qualifying to see how the starting grid sets up?
On occasion, I would say yes. It's a lot more. It's a different attack. I would say yes, that I know I like this guy at this track, or he showed something last week, or somebody you pick something up from the broadcast where they figure something out, that you would say, yeah, I'm definitely going to take a look at this guy. And the reason is you want to make the bet before qualifying, because if the guy qualifies and he's in the first couple of rows, his number is going to come down. The qualifying position, honestly, it doesn't mean a hill of beans, Adam. I mean, you see guys have to go, they qualify and then something happens to their engine and they got to go to a backup car, or they had to reach the engine and the guy starts at the back of the pack. And by the time you're, 50 laps into it, the guy's running in the top three. So qualifying position means nothing, but the one thing it does, it has an impact on the odds.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I guess on some tracks it may matter a little bit. Some of the smaller tracks where there's not a whole lot of passing. But, you talk about some of the other tracks that are out there where, there's going to be, 25 lead changes. Yeah, obviously the qualifying order doesn't really matter that much at that point. So maybe we will talk a little bit more NASCAR with Brian. It's sort of a catch-all segment here on the show as we go throughout the season.
The one thing I throw in, but I would throw in, the one thing I do, and it's whatever, it's ESPN.com, and it's the guy Jayski, J-A-Y-S-K-I. It's amazing the kind of work this guy puts in. But one thing that is actually something I look at, more than qualifying, are the practice times. So they'll have three practice sessions, and they're out there for 20, 30 lap segments, and say, "Oh, this guy's he's running well." So sometimes you can use the practice times to see who's actually running pretty well there. And then the other thing is after qualifying, stall selections. So the guy that's at the front of the pack in pit row has got a massive advantage. But beyond that, you look for guys, and they'll choose. There are like two or three spots in pit row that there's a big space, and they're very advantageous pit stalls because they've got extra room to pull out without, angling in and getting stuck or pinned or hit coming out. So the pits, there's a lot that goes into it, right? I mean, there's the practice times and the pit stall selections are something that if you started playing with it a little bit, if you were thinking of doing it, those are things that can help you. And it really does make a difference during a race when you're watching it.
Well, like I said, maybe we'll try to do a little bit more NASCAR here and sort of look at those things. I mean, the odds for the NASCAR races aren't out, I believe, until Tuesday afternoon offshore. I think Westgate maybe opens the Vegas market Tuesday evening, something like that. So we won't have odds to talk about necessarily, but maybe we can throw some tips in here and there about the NASCAR season. But, Brian, let's transition over to the ice, where we've got, obviously no NASCAR races on ice, but 12 games in the NHL here tonight. Loaded card, pretty spread out card too. A lot of early start times, some 8 o'clock games as well. A few games that jump off the page to me I want to touch on with you here. Game 25-26 on the board. The Islanders are getting some love here tonight against the Buffalo Sabres. Both teams, I believe, playing their fifth game in 8 nights, but the Islanders getting the early betting action.
Oh, as they should. They're having a great season. And funny thing is, they lost to Winnipeg Saturday and played one of their better games of the year. They literally got pinned in their own end on one shift in the third period, and Wheeler scored and put it in. Hutton's getting the start. Morning skate today. Casey Mittelstadt left the practice or the morning skate early. So that for Buffalo, that would be a guy they would miss if he weren't able to play. But there's a defined sense of desperation for Buffalo right now. The funny thing is, you had the 10-game winning streak, and then they fell off the map. But the bottom line is, I think any Sabres fan, i.e. me, at the beginning of the year, if you said in game 55 you'd be 27-21-7, you'd have signed that paper, and you're in the race. I mean, 3 points behind Florida. So they're in it, and I think for Buffalo, they can't wait till the 25th. The trade deadline's now. They're wrapping up a homestand with the Islanders and then the Rangers. And if they short things up in their own end, I think Buffalo's got one final little push in them. But this Islanders team has just been Incredible, Adam. 7-1-2 in their last 10. Grice does get the start tonight. They've gotten great goaltending all year long from Leonard and Grice. They're the real deal. And Barry Trotz, I mean, right now, if the coach of the year, Cooper, certainly, just with what Tampa's doing, would be in the discussion. Peters in Carolina and Trotz on the island are great. And I would make a case, what Julian's doing with Montreal is nothing short of amazing. So those are the guys that are the front runners for the Jack Adams.
Yeah, I was trying to look here and see if Thomas Grice or Robin Leonard had been confirmed the starter. I haven't seen anything yet, but that's something I always wonder about here. With goaltenders returning to play against teams that they used to play for, and obviously for Robin Leonard, I mean, you and I talked about this, I think it was over the summer, when his big article came out about the mental health issues that he's been dealing with and the things that, he battles on a regular basis. And it wasn't the cleanest break from Buffalo. It was kind of a tenuous situation throughout. Is that a big angle for you when a goaltender goes back to face his former team?
Oh, any player gets jacked. I mean, hey, listen, that was the story last year in Vegas. It was guys going back every night. There was a guy going against the team that didn't want him. And he'd play his lungs out, and every night the team would play for that guy. Clearly it's a big thing. Leonard did already have the game against Buffalo earlier this year in Buffalo, his first game back. Said it was the toughest game he ever played. They won 3-1. He played extremely well. And he said he loved Buffalo. It had nothing to do with Buffalo. He had off ice problems, and it's an amazing. He's comeback player of the year. It's just been amazing what he's done. So that game was already. He already played that game. Said it was the toughest game he ever had to play. It was a weird feeling, and he played very well. But yeah, guys circle the calendar on games like that.
Speaking of circling the calendar, Washington and Columbus. I've mentioned this game in my situational article. I mentioned it here on the show as well. I will mention this point for a long time as a sort of Blue Jackets fan, with them being, the in-state team. They're an Artemi Panarin goalpost away from being up 3-0 on Washington in last year's first round. Hits the post. Washington wins the game, wins a series in six. Capitals go on to win the cup, as we all know. So every time Columbus faces Washington, there's just a little bit extra there. This Columbus team, I have no idea what to expect on a nightly basis. One night they look horrible, then they go and sweep a road trip. The next night they look terrible. I don't know what to do with this team, but they're a -145 favorite tonight against the Capitals.
Yeah, I honestly, bud, I wasn't one that I had circled, but I would probably lean to the Caps in the game. Clearly, first of all, the price. In Columbus, when you look at the standings, Columbus is third in the Metro, but I would say this, that I've got the belief that Pittsburgh will get their act together here, and I would think that the Carolinas and Buffaloes of the world, they're targeting Columbus as ultimately what's going to be the fight for that final spot in the East. And I thought about 3-4 weeks ago, Columbus is the one that's going to drop like a rock. And then they went on a little tear. Then they dropped like a rock. I just think this Panarin and Bobrovsky thing is going to be a huge distraction. But Columbus gets the sweep on the road. Vegas was in control of the game, and Atkinson got two late goals. They ended up sweeping the road trip. But in that game, the same scenario exists tonight, Adam. Columbus was catching Vegas, came home from a four-game Eastern road swing. Now Washington's in Columbus, playing Columbus, who's coming back from the first game home, albeit only a three-game road trip. That first game home is just a torturous game to play. There's just it's happened. We've talked about this forever. You're out of town. You're on the road. You're focused on hockey, and you're with the boys. All of a sudden, you come home. You got wives, kids, the distractions, paying bills, go to the grocery store. It's a weird dynamic. You go, oh, they're home, and no, they're home is can be a very tough thing after a long road trip.
One more game I want to hit on here tonight, and then we'll touch on a couple of the games that you like otherwise. Calgary and Tampa Bay. Calgary now in second in the Pacific, but with two games in hand. San Jose absolutely rolling right now. They've rattled off six in a row. But Calgary gets a good measuring stick game tonight against far and away the best team in the NHL. Long way from home for the Flames here, but you know, when I see Tampa Bay as just a minus 150 favorite at home, it's a sign that Calgary is getting a lot of respect, and they probably do deserve it.
Oh, they absolutely deserve it. And that is respect from the odds makers. Calgary is a very interesting team. I would draw the parallel that they were the team this year and like everybody last year. How many times, Adam, did we do the show throughout the course of the year? Other shows I would do. This Vegas thing is unbelievable. When's it going to stop? When's it going to end? Well, it didn't end until Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Finals. And I think Calgary is that team this year where everybody just keeps waiting for the shoe to drop. I think they're well coached. They continue to play well. They're 6-2-2 in their last 10. But one thing that will be interesting, not that it's going to make a difference, they're in the playoffs, but I think the Pacific Division winner gets a massive edge because that first-round matchup between, let's say, Vegas and Calgary or Vegas and San Jose is going to be a really tough series, and the Pacific Division winner kind of sits in the catbird seat when the playoffs gets here. But San Jose's finding their groove and getting away from Calgary for a second. All of a sudden now, San Jose's caught them. San Jose's a point ahead. Yes, Calgary has a couple of games in hand. But it will be interesting to see how Calgary reacts in the short term because everybody expected San Jose to get their act together.
Well, as we look at the rest of the card here for Tuesday night, David Pastrnak, a late scratch here after the morning skate for Boston. That's why that line's bouncing around a little bit here against the Blackhawks. What else are you looking at on tonight's 12-game card, Brian?
Again, it was a wacky card, and I was looking and looking and trying to find something. And, you know, the one that kind of stuck out to me at least was, you know, Carolina and Ottawa over, just the way Ottawa plays. This Carolina team, man, don't sleep on sleep on these guys. They're actually playing really, really well. But Mrazek gets the call tonight. He's 12-12-3. Anders Nielsen gets the call. So you get the backup with Ottawa. He's 9-12-1. And I just think the nature of the game, that's a higher-scoring game to me. And I know this is the time of year where games trend under, but I think those games really trend under when you've got two teams that are fighting for the playoffs. And, you know, the teams that are out of it, they got nothing to lose. So sometimes the team that's out of it can dictate the pace of play. And I think that could be the case here. So I kind of like the over in that game. And as we were talking, the one that I spotted here is Philadelphia's a high-scoring team. But, boy, they've been a different team, clearly, with Hart in net. I'm seeing Anthony Stolarz gets the call tonight. You know, and Minnesota's not a team that you count on, you know, for a truckload of offense. And Dubnyk's very good, but Minnesota's actually sneaky offensively. They got size; they can wear you down in your own end. But with Stolarz in there, I'd be looking for that game maybe to go over the total. And that was not one that I had circled until we started talking this morning. And you know, virtually every Flyers game, 6.5. But because they're playing Minnesota, the total's at 6. So that's a game I could see going over the total as well.
All right, so we move over to the golf side of things here. And, man, what a field at Riviera Country Club here this weekend for the Genesis Open. Dustin Johnson's in it. He's your favorite. We haven't seen him stateside much. He's been playing over on the European Tour. Justin Thomas, Rory, Rahm, DeChambeau. Bubba Watson's a three-time winner here. Schauffele, a California guy, lefty coming off the win. Spieth, Finau, Woods, Matsuyama, Cantlay, Fleetwood, Sergio's in this tournament. What a hell of a field here this weekend at Riviera.
Yeah, and obviously California, the weather's just been so bizarre. Mickelson was phenomenal on Sunday. And, you know, Mickelson on the California swing, that's a great story. And that was a tournament you were watching pretty closely because they're going to be playing the U.S. Open back there at Pebble Beach. So that was kind of interesting to see Mickelson. Yeah, this week in L.A., Cantlay, you mentioned, 30-1 is kind of a guy I would take a peek at. The one, and I won't waste time, I'll go right to the top, and I will absolutely guarantee you he is on my ticket, is Charles Howell III. It, just like the Sony Open in Hawaii and here in L.A., when Howell was, even when Howell was struggling, he would always show up and play well at the Sony Open. He had more rounds in the below 66, I think it was, than anyone in the history of that tournament. He did it again a bunch of times. He played well again this year. The other course Charles Howell always shows up on the leaderboard is in L.A., and Howell is a much better golfer in the last year than he had been for the previous five. So horse for the course, Charles Howell is definitely on my ticket.
Yeah, and you mentioned Cantlay. He was runner-up last year. So, he was in the top five last year, actually.
Kind of, I'm going from memory. Didn't he play at UCLA?
I would have to check that. But he was the 54-hole leader last year. So, you know, that's a guy kind of looking for a little bit of retribution here. You know, you're in position to win it, and then, you know, you don't. And so you kind of got a little bit more there. But, you know, again, this is a field that's just so strong that it pushes some guys, you know, up into some better prices here. And that may be something that we see a lot here going forward. You've got a WGC event next week. Then you've got, you know, kind of the lead-in events to the Masters coming up, to where some really good players that were 25, 30 to 1 over the last few weeks are now going to be 50, 60 to 1. Some of the guys that we've talked about a lot here that haven't picked up wins may be going to have some better prices as we move forward.
There's no doubt. You know, this Wikipedia thing's wonderful. I was going from memory, but Cantlay was born in Long Beach. He attended Servite High School. He won the California State High School Championship as a senior and then won four tournaments in his freshman year at UCLA. So rest assured, he has played this course a gazillion times.
And that's a very good angle. You know, we talk about horse for course stuff when it comes to NASCAR. It's the same thing when it comes to golf. And, you know, familiarity definitely does help. And again, with that stronger field, you know, Cantlay finds himself in the 30-1 range as opposed to, you know, 22 or 24 to 1, and every dollar really does matter with these types of events. Brian, I want to ask you about this. You know, we talk a lot about trying to pick the winners of these things. Dustin Johnson, brutal schedule early on in the year here. Tons of travel all over the place in Europe. Played a couple of PGA Tour events as well. Are you looking to fade him in matchups this weekend? Is that an angle you'd look to play?
It would have been last week because he had played he had won in Saudi Arabia and then flew back. In fact, he had to make a birdie on 18 Saturday to make the cut. He was right on the cut line. Now, you know, he's back. He's more acclimated, and this is a nothing travel down to L.A. from Monterey Peninsula. So I would think he'd probably have a little better bounce in his step. He's more acclimated to the – go ahead, you say it. What is it? Your circuitous
clock,
rhythm. What do you call it?
Circadian.
Yeah,
rhythm.
That thing.
That thing's back in rhythm.
Yeah, you know he's back on the continent, so I would look for a much better effort from Dustin Johnson. But again, 8-1, the price is not that attractive. But travel matters for these guys. It certainly does. It's like anything. Sometimes freshness can be an asset, or you know you've got rust, and so you got to find out who are guys that play well off a layoff. You don't know if they get a 3-week break. Are they taking the family to a resort, or is the guy just shutting it down and he's home and he's doing nothing but practicing, and that could be a good thing. There's so many angles in golf, it's great, and the beauty of it is with the overlay prices that are out there. The one I'll throw one at you, bud. He played Tommy Fleetwood is now over here, just like Rory McIlroy's going to be playing a lot here on the PGA Tour. Tommy Fleetwood's an incredible golfer, and he usually contends. That was not the case at Pebble Beach. But, again, Pebble Beach is such a quirky, goofy thing, playing with the amateurs, and it's a 4-day party. And, you know, some guys are able to, you know, go through all the rigmarole and still play good golf. But this is nothing but a golf tournament again. And it's an overlaid price to me. Tommy Fleetwood at 35-1. I know Bubba Watson is playing well, and he's 20-1, and he's played well at L.A. Mickelson's 20-1. Tommy Fleetwood's every bit as good as these guys. I'd give Tommy Fleetwood a shot at 35-1 to bounce back and contend.
Well, and just one more quick note on Dustin Johnson. Won it in 2017, runner-up in 2015 and 2014. So he does play really well here. So be careful with fading him in the matchups. Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. How can people check out those two shows, Brian?
Well, as you said, Adam, we're back on the beam. We got a lot of cool stuff. Sportsbook Radio, Vegas Hockey Hotline, noon to 2 Pacific time. KSHP.com. Shows are archived at Sportsbook Radio. You can follow me on Twitter, and I'll put the shows out when they're posted, so you can get them off my Twitter account as well. And we're gonna get on the beam here, and we'll get some videos for you from Bang the Book. We'll do a golf video. I know you'll have a golf article. And we'll do a Daytona video as well, some of the things we talked about today. And we always have fun doing the videos for you from Las Vegas for Bang the Book.
Well, there you go. And you can follow Brian on Twitter, at Brian Blessing. Brian, appreciate the time as always, man. Thank you so much, bud. We'll talk to you again next week.
Adam, have a great day, my friend.
There you go. There's Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline, joining us to chat. NASCAR, golf, hockey. We're just going to kind of use that as a catch-all segment. Talk a bunch of different stuff with him as we go throughout the rest of the late winter, early spring here. We got one more guest for this Tuesday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is professional handicapper Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Rolf, how's it going today, man?
Going great, Adam. I just want everyone to know, Brian probably pointed this out. I know he likes jabbing at you at weather, but it snowed here the other night. So driving back home, it was started to rain, and then we saw some snowflakes. So what's this world coming to?
Yeah. You know, I get to South Carolina on Thursday night, and then Friday it's sunny and 75. I'm like, oh, this is phenomenal. And then it was in the mid 40s the rest of the time that we were there. All of our friends are pissed off at us, like we brought the cold weather down. Hey, you know what? I'm thinking spring and hell, pitchers and catchers report today for the Indians, so I guess we're not that far away.
Isn't that always a great sign of spring? I'll tell you what, be it you're a baseball fan or not, when you start hearing pitchers and catchers report, you start seeing spring training games, you know summer's not far around the corner.
I got to say, you know, as somebody who was in Northeast Ohio for a very long time, you know, and obviously we all know that when it rains in Vegas, everyone forgets how to drive. What does it look like out there when it snows?
It didn't stick. I mean, it sticks in the mountains, but it was those raindrops turning into snowflakes and everyone freaks out. I thought it was funny, but you know, the next day it was 55 and sunny and I wore shorts out because it's the sun starting to warm up where if there's no wind the next day, even if it snows like it did, or it gets down to 35 degrees the next day, you're still able to golf. So, it's survivable.
I saw you've been playing a lot of golf lately, and you've got those ABA length shorts from, you know, like 70s basketball. I like the look. It looks good on you.
Yeah, well, you know, someone just called me and caught me off guard, but you always have your clubs in your car. So if you get the opportunity to hit some, I enjoy doing it because pretty soon here, January, February, the rates start creeping up. And unless you have some connections, when you get into March or April out here, it's a pretty penny out of your pocket to hit some of the nicer courses.
Well, hopefully you can have a good, conference tournament March Madness season and be able to, you know, afford to go out there and play some golf when it's 115 degrees. And, you know, I mean, it's a perfect time to golf over the summer out there in Las Vegas. But all right, speaking of March Madness, conference tournaments, all that stuff, not really that far away. And, you know, a conference that will have a lot to say about how March Madness goes is the ACC. So we're going to dig into that conference here on today's show. And obviously there are some significant top teams here, Duke, North Carolina, Virginia, you know, even Louisville as well. I want to focus specifically on the middle of the conference. So we'll do that in a couple of minutes. But, I mean, look, obviously you've got some of the best here in this league.
Oh, no question. I mean, you know, you take the top three teams and they're all worthy of one seeds. And, you know, Virginia Tech's taking that stuff up almost. I mean, Virginia Tech is almost to that elite level where, you know, they're capable of getting the two seed. I don't think they will. I mean, the tournament, the way it plays out, and they're off a couple losses now to Louisville and Clemson. But to me, you know, Duke and Virginia are going to be two of the favorites going in. Duke and Virginia deserve to be favorites. The best talent in the world, no question, is Duke. But, you know, when you get to this tournament time and you're playing multiple teams that play defense, that's the nice thing that Duke has this year is that, you know, you're playing Virginia again, and then you add Virginia Tech in, and then you add Louisville in, and then you add Clemson in, and all of a sudden you're playing elite defenses back to back to back. That really does get you in March Madness shape.
The reason I want to focus on the middle of the conference is that, you know, we've got a lot of new money in the college basketball betting market right now with the NFL over, the Super Bowl gone, and obviously, you know, college football has been gone for over a month now. The perception on teams like Duke, North Carolina, Virginia, and maybe even Louisville, especially if Louisville has a good showing here tonight against Duke, just continues to be on the rise, which means, in theory, we should have opportunities to get, you know, some overlaid prices on the middle-tier teams in this conference, right?
Yeah, I mean, no question. You look at the ACC. I mean, this year, ACC home teams are 97 and 103. I mean, you're under 50%. I will point out that when you're playing conference games in the ACC this year, they're actually 81 and 119 over-under. So you have 40%, 60% of every conference game in the ACC has gone under the total. You know, you have a lot of teams. You look at defenses now, and with Pittsburgh's new head coach and with Louisville's new head coach, you now have, what, nine teams in the top 40 as far as defensive efficiency goes. So to me, there's a lot of over under situations that I like. When there's a team that's a home that's a home favorite, those have only been 40. They're 40.5% over unders again, the same as seasons, but you have many more opportunities to play the totals on that. Home favorites off a straight up loss. A lot of times, these teams only have a few home losses in the ACC, but a home favorite in the ACC off a straight-up loss is only 21 and 20 this year. So the teams are so good, and the teams are so closely situated from top to bottom that even when you have a situation that you think is a normal positive situation in the ACC, you can't. You know, you can't put that into play and say, well, this is going to happen because it normally occurs. You know, one thing I want to bring up, and this is for general handicapping as well as the ACC, but I heard a lot of people talk about last week, Virginia had 7 days off and Duke played a midseason game. Well, this year, the team in February, only in February, that has the 7 days rest, is only 17 and 27, 39%. So just because you think that team hasn't played midweek and they're rested and they're getting ready for their rival, most of the times it's a rival situation. Again, 17 and 27. And if you look at the last 3 years, not quite as good, but still 55 and 62, 44%. So, you know, the Virginia Duke game stands out to me because a couple people, I was on radio shows or talking to people, and you know, they emphasize that like it was the end all. And that's one of those things you and I have talked about and using the killer sports database. And there's so many times when we're handicapping that we hear things that sound legitimate. And because someone says them with an emphasis that all of a sudden it becomes, you know, it goes from hearsay to something you use in your handicapping repertoire. Don't. Find the answer. Go to Killer Sports. Go to any source you can and make sure you're just not using that to give yourself false value.
There are three teams specifically I want to touch on here. Florida State, Clemson, and North Carolina State. And I imagine for North Carolina State, what everybody remembers about that team is scoring 24 points against Virginia Tech while ignoring the fact they held Virginia Tech to 47. So it was a pretty decent defensive showcase from NC State. They just didn't score. But Florida State, Clemson, and NC State, you know, very dangerous teams. And in fact, looking at, you know, your Wager Talk college basketball guide that you've got, you know, you've got Florida State number 21 in your power ratings, Clemson 31, NC State 32. These are very capable teams of pulling upsets here later in the conference play portion of the year.
Yeah, looking at it, I probably think I have Clemson a touch too high. I may have gotten enamored with them the last couple games, you know, because they've won four straight and, You know, their losses aren't bad. Of course, there are no bad losses in the ACC. You know, when I say, oh, Clemson's 15-8, losses to Duke, Virginia, Florida State, NC State, you know, they had, and a loss at Syracuse on the road. So, you know, it's tough to say there are bad, bad losses in the ACC. Yeah, if you lose to Wake Forest at home or Boston College at home, that's a bad loss. Anything else I can semi-live with. But I look at what Clemson's done, and while you can say they only have five losses and they're not bad losses, you look at their wins, Georgia Tech twice, Wake Forest, and Pittsburgh. Those are four wins at the bottom of the rankings. Their only decent win was to Virginia Tech at home. That was this past Saturday. So in the ACC, unlike any other conference, it's not the teams you lose to. It's the teams you beat and how bad you beat them by. So when I was re-looking at my ratings and, you know, doing these every week, it's tough. You know, you're putting yourself in a position to try to get a number right, and you're looking at teams and how they've done, and you're increasing or decreasing their power rating numbers based on performance. But hindsight now, looking back, you know, getting ready and looking at the ACC, I probably have Clemson a point or two higher. I probably have NC State a little ahead of them and move them down because of the wins. So again, it's unique because in the ACC, don't look at the losses, look at the wins they have. And do you have any good wins on the road? And Clemson doesn't have those. So of that trio, you know, that's why I would put them third in the group. You know, you break down Florida State, and Florida State was a team last year that, you know, to me, underachieved. I thought they would do a lot better. You know, Leonard Hamilton got them to 23-12, but then they make the run, beat Missouri, Xavier, the Zags, and lose to Michigan. So that team all of a sudden became the team I thought they would in the tournament this year, You know, they're sitting at 18-5, looking at the losses. Do they have any bad losses? Well, losing to Virginia and Duke isn't bad. Their other losses, losing to Villanova. And then Pittsburgh and Boston College, both on the road, both early in the season. Any good wins? Yeah, you go to Syracuse and win, that's good. You beat Clemson, that's all right. You beat Louisville at home in overtime this past week, that's good. So they have yet to face those other elite teams. You know, they're going to come down the stretch and they're going to play, you know, North Carolina, NC State, and Virginia Tech. They only face Virginia once. That's a positive for them, not having to face that multiple team. So I'd have them in the second level of the trio. And although NC State has struggled of late, losing three straight prior to beating Pittsburgh, and they're only 17-7 with six losses, they're a team that I still think is, you know, has the offense and continues to prove on defense. They're the fast, they're a fast-paced team, which isn't like most teams in the conference where they like to race. You have these Virginias, you have now the Pittsburghs, the Georgia Techs, you know, the teams that can play defense. So they're a little bit different where they can press it. We saw them against, you know, we saw them against Virginia Tech, but you got to remember that Virginia Tech loss, people forget that that was the game after losing to Virginia at home in overtime. That was clearly a situation of one great performance at home costing him two losses coming off that Virginia game. And then what happened? Then they went to North Carolina and, again, lost handily. So those three losses are gone. I'm okay with those. Moving forward, you got Syracuse and Duke. Yes, they're tough, but they're going to finish, I think, winning five of their last six games. So even though I have them all bundled together as far as the ratings go, my upside for those three teams, I think, is NC State as my highest.
Well, and like I said, I mean, what we're looking for here is we're kind of looking at teams that are capable of, you know, not just covering numbers in really good spots, but maybe even, you know, pulling some of those outright upsets. Because you look at teams like Duke, North Carolina, Virginia, and so on, no matter how good you are, it is very hard to play a sustainable level of basketball over 35 games and to keep getting off the deck and doing it repeatedly in conference play. So at this time of the year, the quote unquote dog days of the season, you know, those are things where you really want to look situationally and also make sure that you've got a team that can put forth the effort that you need.
You know, absolutely. And the thing to remember moving, you know, moving forward is, when we get closer to the tournaments, yes, these teams are starting to play, but these top five teams in the ACC have no pressure at all. Yes, they want to win the ACC title. Yes, I think, you know, Virginia's win against North Carolina, I think, was almost a must win for them last night. You know, it was a situation where they were off that Duke loss. They had lost both games to Duke. And, it, you know, if they started to, you know, if they started to not all of a sudden beat any of the upper echelon teams, I think they have that question. So winning that road game at North Carolina, I think, was huge for Virginia. You know, are they a one or a two seed? Does it really matter? I mean, it doesn't matter if you're one or two. You're going to play the same bracket. You're going to face each other when it gets to the end. I mean, that's all just popularity and little prestige being a one seed. But there is absolutely no difference in the schedule-wise playing a one or a two seed. You know, if you fall down to a three or a four, that's a little bit different for those first round games. But, you know, moving forward, I think you're going to see a lot more teams starting to work on the defense like they always do as they get better. And if they have a situation where they're behind, you know, if you get into live betting and you have one of these better teams that's just having a bad game on the road, you know, those are the teams that don't have to make the big run. Those are the teams that don't mind taking a 10-point loss, even though they were a favorite, because that one game means nothing for them. It's not worth putting in a couple tired guys to try to get a win, where the mid-tier guys certainly have to play that way because you never know what's going to pan out. You know, right now, as far as the ranks go, you know, I have everyone 2, 4, 6, 8. I have 9 from the ACC in, everyone from NC State up. That leaves out Notre Dame, Georgia Tech, Boston College, Wake Forest, Pittsburgh, and Miami. I think it's pretty clear this year. The ACC normally hasn't been this clear. I don't think anyone is on the bubble unless Clemson or NC State all of a sudden just lose a couple players and lose 5 or 6. So it's so different this year in the ACC because everyone that's in is in, I believe, and everyone that's out is out.
Well, we go from an 8 or 9 bid league in the ACC to a 1 bid league in the Missouri Valley Conference. Loyola Chicago making that Cinderella run last year. Everybody kind of fell in love with that team and Sister Jean and all the things that they were doing there. They haven't really been all that great here in the regular season, although it does look like they're starting to separate themselves from the rest of the Mo Valley.
Yeah, you know, they are now 9-3 and you know, 16-9. And, you know, they're still – are they the best team? Well, yeah, I have them – you know, if you look at my rankings, I have them ranked 104 and the next best team 135. So they are clear. You know, they're 16-9. They haven't lost a Missouri Valley home game since last year. I think Indiana State was their last loss. And I don't see them losing at home the rest of the way. They've become a very, very good home team, and their defense is starting to play better. And, you know, you see some high-scoring games, but the Missouri Valley, you know, we saw a 47-24 score in the ACC. If that happened in the Missouri Valley, no one blinks an eye. The leading scoring team in the Missouri Valley is Evansville. Evansville in the NCAA, remember, there are 353 teams. Evansville is 228. So every team in the Missouri Valley, the best team scoring is 228 in the country and down. The worst defense in the league is also Evansville or Indiana State, excuse me. The worst team is 212 and up. So you want to talk about a defensive-minded or an offensively inept-minded, maybe we should say, because the best offense I have is Drake at 123. And Drake, I mean, is a surprise team because Drake is a team that lost their point guard 10 games ago. I thought they would falter, and, you know, all of a sudden they've ripped off 8 of 10. So, You have just an incredibly slow-paced league. You know, again, 353 teams in the league. Top tempo team is Evansville. Indiana State and Drake are all between 70 and 100. Indiana State, Missouri State, 214s to the 250s. and then everyone else 316 or higher. So it's a very, very slow paced game. It's senior guards not making mistake late in games. It's stealing a couple of those road wins that are going to go down to the wire, and you have a score to go to where other teams don't. And, you know, that's the difference in the league. You have, from top to bottom, a five-game gap. That's it. Loyola, Chicago, 9-3. Your worst teams in the league, Indiana State and Evansville, 4-8. Put that in perspective. The Ivy League's played five games, and they have a four-game difference from top to bottom already after five games. These teams have played 12 games, top to bottom, only a five-game difference. I mean, the Pac-12, Cal is 0-11. Washington, you have a 10-game difference. SEC, a 10-game difference. Pac-12, 9.5-game difference. So there are no easy games. This is a bunch of, you know, if you took the ACC's schedule of their 14 teams, you know, this would be the middle 8 teams in the conference. Excuse me, the middle 10 teams that are so closely bundled. That's an incredible top team 104, bottom team 204, 100 gap in the margin for the entire conference. So day in and day out, you are getting battle tested.
Yeah, you look at the full season here, Drake, 18-5 against the number 8-4 in conference play. The worst ATS team here, and this coming from Rolf's Wager Talk College Basketball Guide, the worst team in conference ATS, Northern Iowa, 7-16 against the number. One thing that does stand out here a little bit about this conference this year, Rolf, is that usually we get a very well-defined home-road split. Home teams traditionally very, very good in conference or in Missouri Valley Conference. This year, it's kind of changing a little bit where we're getting some of those road upsets. I think it just kind of speaks to how inconsistent most of these teams are.
Yeah, I mean, there's only the home wins are only 63%. That's straight up. So right now, I mean, that's one of the lowest numbers there are in the conference. Close games, those of 4 points or less or overtime, 18.3. So that goes to show you the road teams are in the game. There are a lot of close games. It does go down to the buzzer. You know, I think you have teams with two bullseyes on your back. You know, to me, the perception is Northern Iowa, you know, Northern Iowa this year is 10-15. And last year they were 16-16. You know, and the year before they were mediocre. But there's still something about that Northern Iowa team for that run that they did, that they were such a dominant team, that people still get excited to play Northern Iowa. And I think that is why their record is so poor, both straight up and ATS. They still have to take everyone's shots. Yes, we know Loyola is getting, you know, Loyola has that monkey on their back too, where they have the bullseye and they are a team that everyone gets fired up. I mean, you know, they got more press in the tournament than every other team has in the last decade combined. So, you know, you certainly are a team that has to take everyone's best shot. And again, you're just taking a beating every time you play. I don't think they're a team. They're nothing compared to last year where they had, you know, multiple starters. And I think all five players averaged in double digits, led by Clayton Custer, who is back. But, you know, Illinois State is that team this year. Illinois State is sitting at 7-5 in the conference. They're tied for second with Drake and Missouri State. Illinois State has all five players. I'm taking this from my reading, so it may not be 100% accurate, but I'm pretty sure it is. All five of their players are averaging double digits. When you have that type of team that can hang in the games, that has multiple options late in the game in this type of conference, they're the type of team that I'll keep my eye on when we get to the tournament and to Arch Madness.
So on a game-by-game basis for a conference like this where, you know, again, you used to have that well-defined home edge. We don't see that anymore. You mentioned, you know, the spread from the top team to the bottom team from a standing standpoint. Do you tend to sort of just, you know, shy away from a conference like this because of the variance level, or do you feel like you have found some spot plays here?
You know, I have found some spots totals-wise. The Missouri Valley has not been favorable to me. Like I said, you know, Drake stands out to me after they lost Nick Norton because I played against him a few times. And, you know, Nick Norton was a person who, a point guard who started every game last year, a guard for him who started every game and then started the first 12 games this year up until January 2nd against Evansville when he finally got hurt and was out for the year. And they cost me a few losses playing against them on the road. But because of the totals, because here you have totals with, as I said, you have four teams with tempos that are 315 or higher, from 315 to 353. So the conference is so low scoring. As I said, your top scorer is 228. Your worst scoring defense is 212. That there's a couple times when those teams that aren't slow, Evansville is 70, Indiana State 94, Drake 105, you can get some value actually looking at the overs in those games because they're playing against teams that don't play the slow pace. You're going against, you know, if you look at the last 10 games, well, seven or eight of those games were against the slowest paced teams in the country. And now you're getting situations where you're playing normal paced teams against each other. And you can find some value with totals in that spot. And also when you do have two teams that are so low, I am never afraid to use totals that are 120, 119, because I still don't think Vegas can go low enough. You know, I've talked about this several times. You know, when you have these UCFs and when you have these teams that are so slow, the Virginias, the Virginia Techs, you know, I think Vegas stops at 120. And, you know, in their mind, it's going to take money to move it down below 120. Some of these totals in my mind should be 109, 110s, but Vegas can't put them low enough because their job isn't to put a total where it should be. Their job is to put a total where they're going to get equal money on both sides. Joe Public sees a total of 119 and thinks 60-60. There's no way both teams aren't going to get to 60. Well, yeah, in the Missouri Valley, there's a lot of ways they don't get to 60. You know, usually some of those teams, first one to 55 wins. So two senses of value in the Missouri Valley, I think both with totals. When you get those slow teams that play the better defense and have inept offenses, don't be afraid to go too low. And when you get those rare occurrences at those top three or four teams in tempos, you know, you're going to get a very fair total because it's a Missouri Valley game, but you're not playing your normal opponent or style of play.
All right, so we take a look here at Rolf's top situational and technical plays for this week to wrap up this segment on Bang the Book Radio. So I guess we'll start with the situational side of it. Is that game coming from tonight?
Yep, situational is tonight. Technical is tomorrow. And situational is I'm going to be as blunt as I can. Play against Western Michigan. West Virginia is not a bad team to play against, too. Western Michigan is a team that's winless in the MAC. They are not very good. And here's a system for you to use. And I just want to remind people, you know, we talked about the Ivy a couple weeks ago. And, you know, I gave you a system in the Ivy that when a home favorite, when a team is a home favorite on Saturday after a loss on Friday, it's been a 68 or 69% play. That won again this past week. So keep an eye on that moving forward in the Ivy. It's been very, very successful. This is not a conference system. It's a league-wide system. When you get to February and you have a team with six wins or less and they're a small home dog of 0 to 3.5, they are 9-20 against the spread, 8-22 straight up, and that is Western Michigan. Again, you have a team that's 0-10 in conference play, hasn't won a game since December 30th against UC Riverside, which is one of the worst teams. They only have one win against the top 230 opponent. That was against Oakland back on November 13th. Northern Illinois is coming in off three straight losses, but against good teams, Toledo, Ball State, and Eastern Michigan. And you have a situation where Northern Illinois has lost 12 straight in Kalamazoo. And, you know, last week we talked about the WAC and the worst team in all of basketball, Chicago State. Western Michigan in conference play shooting 40.0%. The worst team, Chicago State, shooting 39.2%. So all of that points to Western Michigan. Normally, when all of those things would happen, it would be one of my top plays for my clients. I'm on the cusp of using it because Northern Illinois' best player and leading scorer, Eugene German, is suspended tonight. Now, he was also suspended last game, and I don't mind playing against a suspension as much as an injury. When it's an injury, the team says, oh, crap, you know, we were dealt a bad blow. A lot of times when it's a suspension, I think the team says, well, this guy let us down. He screwed up. And, you know, next guy steps up, and the next guy has stepped up. So I'm waffling whether it'll be one of my top plays of the night. But, again, system-wise, I think it's a great thing to look forward to, because when you get these bad teams and it's a close game where they're at home only getting a few points, it's been a solid, solid play against.
Well, and as you look at Western Michigan here, going back to February 2nd and then looking ahead to this Saturday, they'll play six games in 14 days. They play Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday this week. All three of them, though, are at home, so no travel for them. But still, a lot of basketball in a short amount of time for a team that's lost, what, four straight games by double digits and a couple of them by upwards of 20 points.
Yeah, you know, the reign is over for Steve Hawkins. I mean, he's been there 15 years. His contract is up this year or next year. It's time for a change for them. You know, they are what they are. They haven't had 20 wins since 2015, 13 wins in 16, 16 wins, 17 wins in this season. So I'm sure they will have a new coach for next year, excuse me. But it's a team that just shows no sign of life at all. And even with NIU's top player down, it's still going to be one of my plays in my mix when I finalize my card. So, and remember, yes, this Northern Illinois lost three games in a row, and yes, they lost their top player, but they do have another top scorer, Levi Bradley. He's just as good. So it's not as if the one player averaged 20 and no one else averaged 10 or less. Both players were very close, so they have a go-to scorer. And this is the same Northern Illinois team that beat Buffalo two and a half weeks ago. So, you know, put it in perspective that look at what they've done at body of work for the season, not just what they've done the last couple of games.
All right, so what's your top technical play of the week?
You know, it's going to be a totals play, and it's going to be one of those lower totals for tomorrow, and it's Villanova-Providence under, you know, I have 130 is the number in my mind. Villanova just 1-9-1 over-under at home. They, we talked about slow-paced play in the Missouri Valley. They are number 346 of the 353 teams. No one plays slower. Providence, six straight unders. Providence, 2-9 under in conference play. The last three of these series has gone under by 8 points per game. They played back at January 5th at Providence. The total is 137.5. So it might even come over that 130 because of what that opening total was. And, you know, Providence in the conference, the number one team in defensive efficiency, they're last in offensive efficiency. So I think the situation is going to be a nice, nice low-scoring game. That is Wednesday, Villanova and Providence under the total.
Rolf Michaels, professional handicapper over at WagerTalk.com. What's going on over there right now, Rolf?
You know what? Again, just check out the free content. Go to WagerTalk.com. Go to the Cal Sports page. The NBA stat sheet, which is free daily, I put a free best bet on that. It is now 15-3 the last 16 games. And the NBA stat sheet, the college basketball guide, as you mentioned a few times, it's basically what I do when I'm handicapping. Each of the 32 conferences has a full page. You can find out my power rating number, their records. And, you know, to me, you know, Adam, you know, when we're handicapping conferences, the records are good, but I love looking at the points per game diff and the rebounds per game diff. When you have teams that are of equal records and one team is outscoring the other in conference play by 4 or 5 points and they're a better rebounding team and they turn over the ball less, it's just common sense that it's always a play that I look at. So at a glance, we have all conference action the rest of the year. You just look at each page, check out those games tonight, put where you would make the line, check out where the line is, find some value. It's free. I post it every Monday, so you use it today. It's completely updated for all these games this week until we get to the weekends when they start playing the second game of the week.
Ralph Michaels, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com, at CalSportsLV on Twitter. Appreciate the time as always, Ralph. Thank you so much, man. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Adam.
There you go. There's professional handicapper Ralph Michaels from wagertalk.com. Not sure what I'm going to do yet with the Wednesday edition of the show. Obviously, with no Monday show, I'm going to try to get Kyle Hunter on twice this week. We'll see if we're able to do that. So I don't really have much to tell you about tomorrow's show. Haven't had a chance to reach out to everybody yet. So we will have a show, just not sure who exactly is going to be on that program. But that'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.